Lanning set his lips and raised his eyebrows in the direction of Dr. Susan Calvin, who lifted her eyes from her precisely folded hands for the first time. Her voice was low and colorless. "The nature of a robot reaction to a dilemma is startling," she began. "Robot psychology is far from perfect. As a specialist, I can assure you of that. But it can be discussed in qualitative terms, because with all the complications introduced into a robot's positronic brain, it is built by humans and is therefore built according to human values. Now, a human caught in an impossibility often responds by a retreat from reality, by entry into a world of delusion, or by taking to drink, going off into hysteria, or jumping off a bridge. It all comes to the same thing. A refusal or inability to face the situation squarely. And so, the robot. A dilemma at its mildest will disorder half its relays, and at its worst, it will burn out every positronic brain path past repair." "I see," said Robertson, who didn't. "Now what about this information Consolidated's wishing on us?" "It undoubtedly involves," said Dr. Calvin, "a problem of a forbidden sort. But the brain is considerably different from Consolidated's robot." "That's right, Chief. That's right." The general manager was energetically interruptive. "I want you to get this, because it's the whole point of the situation." Susan Calvin's eyes glittered behind the spectacles, and she continued patiently. "You see, sir, Consolidated's machines, their super thinker among them, are built without personality. They go in for functionalism, you know. They have to, without U.S. robots' basic patents for the emotional brain paths. Their thinker is merely a calculating machine on a grand scale, and a dilemma ruins it instantly. However, the brain, our own machine, has a personality, a child's personality. It is a supremely deductive brain, but it resembles an idiot savant. It doesn't really understand what it does. It just does it. And because it is really a child, it is more resilient. Life isn't so serious, you might say." The robo-psychologist continued. "Here is what we're going to do. We have divided all of Consolidated's information into logical units. We are going to feed the units to the brain singly and cautiously. When the factor enters, the one that creates the dilemma, the brain's child personality will hesitate. Its sense of judgment is not mature. There will be a perceptible interval before it will recognize a dilemma as such, and in that interval, it will reject the unit automatically before its brain paths can be set in motion and ruined." Robertson's Adam's apple squirmed. "Are you sure now?" Dr. Calvin masked impatience. "It doesn't make much sense, I admit, in lay language, but there is no conceivable use in presenting the mathematics of this. I assure you, it is as I say." The general manager was in the breach instantly and fluently. "So here's the situation, Chief. If we take the deal, we can put it through like this. The brain will tell us which unit of information involves the dilemma. From there, we can figure why the dilemma. Isn't that right, Dr. Bogart?" "There you are, Chief. And Dr. Bogart is the best mathematician you'll find anywhere. We give Consolidated a no-solution answer with the reason and collect $100,000. They're left with a broken machine. We're left with a whole one. In a year, two maybe, we'll have a space warp engine, or a hyperatomic motor, some people call it. Whatever you name it, it will be the biggest thing in the world." Robertson chuckled and reached out. "Let's see the contract. I'll sign it." When Susan Calvin entered the fantastically guarded vault that held the brain, one of the current shift of technicians had just asked it, "If 1.5 chickens lay 1.5 eggs in 1.5 days, how many eggs will 9 chickens lay in 9 days? The brain had just answered, 54. And the technician had just said to another, "See, you dope." Dr. Calvin coughed, and there was a sudden, impossible flurry of directionless energy. The psychologist motioned briefly, and she was alone with the brain. The brain was a 2-foot globe merely, one which contained within it a thoroughly conditioned helium atmosphere, a volume of space completely vibration absent and radiation free, and within that was that unheard of complexity of positronic brain paths that was the brain. The rest of the room was crowded with the attachments that were the intermediaries between the brain and the outside world, its voice, its arms, its sense organs. Dr. Calvin said softly, "How are you, brain?" The brain's voice was high-pitched and enthusiastic. "Swell, Miss Susan. You're going to ask me something. I can tell. You always have a book in your hand when you're going to ask me something." Dr. Calvin smiled mildly. "Well, you're right, but not just yet. This is going to be a question. It will be so complicated, we're going to give it to you in writing. But not just yet. I think I'll talk to you first." "All right. I don't mind talking." "Now, Brain, in a little while, Dr. Lanning and Dr. Bogart will be here with this complicated question. We'll give it to you a very little at a time and very slowly, because we want you to be careful. We're going to ask you to build something, if you can, out of the information. But I'm going to warn you now that the solution might involve, damage to human beings." "Gosh." The exclamation was hushed, drawn out. "Now you watch for that. When we come to a sheet which means damage, even maybe death, don't get excited. You see, Brain, in this case, we don't mind. Not even about death. We don't mind at all. So when you come to that sheet, just stop, give it back, and that'll be all. You understand?" "Oh, sure. By golly, the death of humans. Oh, my." "Now, Brain, I hear Dr. Lanning and Dr. Bogart coming. They'll tell you what the problem is all about, and then we'll start. Be a good boy now."